is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We go immediately to Central America. There's much news, especially about elections past and elections future. We begin with the news that the new president of Honduras, Ms. Castro, has arrived in China. You will recall there was a flap earlier this year about Honduras when it, with the new president, moving from recognizing Taiwan to recognizing the People's Republic of China. That was seen as a victory, a diplomatic victory for China. The question now is, what does Honduras get out of it? Professor, a very good day to you. President Castro now is in seeking accommodation with China. What can we expect? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, this is a fairly common playbook when countries turn from Taiwan to China. And so this was expected from the time that the change was announced. Just this past week, of course, the PRC opened its new embassy in Tegucigalpa. Xiomara Castro, it appears, just landed this morning, would be this evening in Beijing with a delegation. As would be expected, that includes well-connected business persons. The announcement has been that there'll probably be some announcements of going forward with China buying an expanded amount of Honduran coffee. There probably will be other announcements of cooperation agreements that will open up the Honduran market to the PRC. There's been some talk about the negotiation of a free trade agreement. Again, that's fairly standard. So overall, I think we're going to see a lot of symbolism, but behind it, the non-transparent MOUs will really help to open up the Honduran market. And as we've also seen, Honduras and China are going forward with a level of political cooperation. We've already seen announcements of media cooperation, and including a content sharing agreement with Xinhua. So I think what we're going to see a deepening of some of these relationships will raise a question of China's expanding influence in Central America, now even closer to the United States.
The Honduras piece of the Northern Triangle is unsolved. So we'll go to another one that appeared to be solved. However, it's changing. This is Guatemala. Guatemala is holding an election soon enough, as I understand it. And the question is, will be a fair and free election? We have headlines today that suggest not. For example, ABC is reporting Guatemala's presidential hopefuls channel heavy-handed tactics of El Salvador's leader. Never good to compare yourself to Bukele. He's a one-off. We also have Guatemala selling $1 billion bond after credit rating boost. And we have call for Guatemala from a Senator Peter Welch for free and fair elections. Now, as I understand it, the leading candidate is a man named Pineda, and we spoke of him last week. He's been removed from his candidacy has been removed from the ballot. Is Guatemala at risk of slipping into authoritarianism?
Well, John, one of the tendencies that we've long seen both on the left and on the right is the use of control of political institutions and thus also judicial institutions, et cetera, to perpetuate oneself in power. So we've seen it in Venezuela. We've seen it in Nicaragua on the left with the Ortegas. We saw it in El Salvador when after Nayib Bukele and his New Ideas Party captured over two-thirds of the Congress there, they'd begun doing certain things to protect themselves in terms of firing the old attorney general, et cetera. And so in Guatemala, which has actually been deeply conservative, and you have a relatively pro-U.S. Regime in the form of that of President Alejandro Giammattei, the desire to perpetuate the parties with conservative interests in power had led to the elimination of a number of non-traditional candidates. That had included leftist Roberto Arzu and Thelma Cabrero. That had left a business person and a former diplomat Carlos Pineda and is the front runner just by a hair. He was just eliminated by on a technicality in the Supreme Court of Guatemala, basically reaffirmed his elimination. And so that literally leaves three people, two of which are substantially traditional. Sandra Torres of the UNE, whose husband Alvaro Colom was previously president of Guatemala. Zuri Rios, who is the, I believe, granddaughter of the former dictator of Guatemala, Rios Montt, and a businessman, Edwin Mollett, again, former diplomat, who actually may be eliminated yet by another court decision. So at the end of the day, the use of the influence in the courts through technicalities to eliminate candidates that could oppose the regime. We've seen it in Nicaragua on the left. We've seen it elsewhere. And sadly, we're seeing it in Guatemala. And despite Guatemala's pro-U.S. orientation and strategic value to the United States, it's a bit of a sad testimony of where things are going in the country.
And the third member of the Northern Triangle, I do this grouping, Evan, because that was the way it was presented early in the Biden administration because of the caravans that were arriving at the border. The story has changed considerably since then. But in any event, I stay with the regional grouping, even if it is discordant. The third member is El Salvador. And therein lies a story that is totally mysterious and wonderful at the same time. President Bukele, who we're told by the polls is popular, despite the fact that he's jailed tens of thousands of young people, accusing them of being part of the gang, some might very well be. He's popular also because he comes up with what you'd have to say is unusual thinking. And right now his thinking is, I think, to use a volcano to produce energy that then can be converted to bitcoins and make El Salvador a billion-dollar bitcoin haven. In the meantime, they're proceeding to generate energy with green technology at the same time. Do you understand Bukele's popularity, despite the fact that he's a massive jailer, and his popularity despite the fact that he's wandering into cryptocurrency, where only the dangerous and, what you'd have to say, the less than legal wander?
Well, for me, John, the story of disillusionment and social stress and where that takes you in terms of populist leaders goes in very different ways, but there's similarities in the stories. And Guatemala, as we just saw, it's established elite using its control over juridical institutions to perpetuate itself in power. In Honduras, the same frustrations led to a more non-traditional leftist party, Libre, with Xiomara Castro, which is working to change the rules. In El Salvador, that the gang violence and the other difficulties led to the election of a young, iconic millennial leader. So the thing that people like about Bukele was that he was just so non-traditional. Especially when that brought in his New Ideas Party to control two-thirds of the Congress, Bukele now has the legislative fiat to do what he wants. And one of the things that he has done, among others, was he's a big believer in cryptocurrencies and in Bitcoin. And so 2 years ago, he established a series of laws to make Bitcoin legal tender in El Salvador. He has promoted Bitcoin initiatives. One of the ones that he talked about was the harnessing the energy of a volcano to mine Bitcoin, which requires tremendous, tremendous amounts of energy. The sad part is that El Salvador, which has serious development problems, the people in the country really could use that electricity in many other ways to help the quality of their life. But the current project, and again, when you're in control of two-thirds of the Congress, you can do what you want. You have talk of a billion-dollar project beginning with a $250 million investment in wind and in solar, basically in an area called Metapan, to eventually create a Bitcoin mining operation that would essentially use that energy that could be used to better the lives of Salvadorans to do big calculations that generates money that doesn't exist but is hoped will be the currency of the future, despite what we've already seen as it's a massive drop in value and in the warnings from organizations like the IMF that the valuation of Bitcoin really isn't a stable thing to base one's national currency or national economy on.
He's a young man, and therefore he's making a lot of young man's moves here to set up the future for himself. However, I puzzle what Washington makes of Bukele. He's been changing over the years. Is there a fixed position? Last time I checked, he's neither left nor right. He's a one-off.
Well, one of the issues is certainly with the Biden administration has been concerns over some of his more or less anti-democratic practices. And so going back to his behavior, even under the Trump administration, when he had moved in to he brought the army in to basically stand in the parliament to try to intimidate congresspersons into passing a vote that that he'd wanted. Other acts such as, for example, the crackdown on gangs, which has made him hugely popular. But he is, as we've talked about on the show before, done so in a way by, using a state of emergency that lets him round up anybody that's even suspected being a gang member. And so as many as 10% of the 60,000 people who have been thrown into jails under horrible conditions in El Salvador may be innocent, but again, when you have that amount of power, you can do what you want. So my sense is that especially the Biden administration, with its emphasis on concerns over human rights and democratic processes, has been less than enamored with Bukele. And I think reflecting on that, he was of course not invited to the democracy summit. So there's certainly a desire to continue working with him, Washington, I think, has been less than enamored. And certainly the fact that also he continues to turn to China for some of his major projects, with the possibility of developing a major port there in La Union using Chinese investment, also increases the level of discomfort across the board in Washington with where he's at, even though politically he is on the kind of, across the board, as you pointed out, but not, on the left in the same sense that the Ortegas in Nicaragua or Xiomara Castro and her Liberty Party are in Honduras.
You mentioned Castro and Ortega, and it reminds me I went too fast. Is the playbook at hand here that as Nicaragua became an authoritarian state, it leaned towards China and now is confiscating the church's poor box? And is that the road ahead for Honduras and perhaps El Salvador? Is that the same playbook?
Well, the paths are certainly slightly different, John, but there are certain commonalities. And so in the case of Nicaragua, after the April 2018 protests that almost dislodged the Ortegas and the Ortega crackdown in which hundreds of people were thrown in jail, and then subsequently action was taken to hold presidential elections in which, not unlike Guatemala, almost all of the legal opposition was made illegal. NGOs have been moved out and shut down. And of course, in Nicaragua, like other parts of Central America, you have a very, very deeply rooted role of the Catholic Church. And so as a threat to the Ortegas, you've seen moves against the church. So you saw the expulsion of a number of different priests, including the Bishop Rolando Alvarez. Alvarez, who was threatened to be expelled but decided to stay in the country, was convicted of 26 years in prison. And so kind of the latest sad chapter of that, again, moving against the opposition using control of legal institutions, has been that Nicaraguan authorities have basically found lots of cash in churches in the country. They moved to freeze assets. So basically, if you want to shut down an organization, whether political or otherwise, you find a way to freeze its assets and make it go away. Matter of fact, you actually saw that in Guatemala, where they basically did a criminal case against one of the leading newspapers, El Periódico, and basically forced it to shut down by moving against its leader. And so in Nicaragua, it's basically moving against the finances of the church. So not only freezing its assets, but then actually going in and finding stashes of cash, which you probably had a number of legitimate reasons, because you need to have people need to store cash, and churches considered a safe place to keep your cash among places in Nicaragua. So what's clear is the continuing move against the Catholic Church in Nicaragua is one of the few remaining deep set bastions of resistance to the Ortega's dictatorship.
We're going to Mexico. There's been big news for AMLO with Professor Evan Ellis. I'm John Batchelor.